This is the Health City Podcast. Healthcare insights from healthcare leaders with Matt Morton.
Hi, everybody. This is Matt Morton. Welcome to the Health City Podcast, where I talk with top healthcare leaders to uncover their rise to the highest levels of the industry and the most valuable insights that they learned along the way. Today's guest is healthcare leader and innovator Paul Johnson. Paul was the CEO and co-founder of Lemonade Health, which is now part of 23andMe. In our conversation, we discuss how he started Lemonade Health, his thoughts on innovating in the healthcare sector, and his recommendations for other digital health leaders in the field. Please welcome Paul Johnson. So, Paul, thanks so much for coming on the Health City Podcast today. Excited to talk more about your journey. You have a great journey, you know, especially with your build and sale of Lemonade Health. But before we get into that, let's go back to the beginning. Take us back to your undergrad days, your major, and how you got into the industry.
Sure. Well, thank you so much for having me on. So the early days started in England, rural countryside, a beautiful village in the middle of nowhere where I was born. I then spent 8 years growing up in the Netherlands, actually. So went to a British school in the Netherlands, then moved back to the UK to study at the University of Worcester, where I studied computer science and business management. My sort of childhood dream was to become an airline pilot. So certainly nothing in healthcare at all. And as a sort of young child, I was really into computers and technology. And that was the initial focus of my career.
So initially you went in for computer science because of that interest. And then you combine that with business as well. So you go through your undergraduate studies, and I believe your first job was with, you know, the skin clinics or Destination Skin. How did you wind up getting that role?
Yeah. So while I was at high school, I set up my first business. I taught myself how to code in PHP and set up a website selling things online, a basic e-commerce store. And later, while I was at university, set up a digital marketing agency and was helping a variety of clients get visitors to their website, develop their website, improve conversion rates, figure out how to get people coming back and transacting time and time again. And one of those clients happened to be a company called Destination Skin that was a chain of skincare clinics. And after university, having done that for a little while, I figured I should probably go and work for someone and experience a real job in a sense. And they were looking for someone to build their e-commerce business. And that was something I'd had experience doing and something I was excited to do.
Amazing. I was going to ask you if you were always entrepreneurial and kind of wanted to start a company. So it sounds like you did that while you were in university. What was your e-commerce company, by the way? What were you selling on that?
There were a couple. The one was selling sports equipment online. One was selling computer equipment online. And then I set a business selling things on eBay. So I would buy things in bulk and then split them up and sell them on eBay and rush home from university at lunchtime to package things up and take it to the post office. So it was those were fun days.
Love it. I love it. So you work with Destination Skin for a little while, and then I believe your second role was with Zoo Plus. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I got a call from a recruitment consultant asking if I wanted to go and work for one of Europe's largest e-commerce retailers called Zoo Plus. And I hadn't heard of it, partly because I didn't have any pets and I didn't have any experience in the pet supply industry. But Zoo Plus was Europe's largest online pet supply shop, I guess, selling rabbit hutches, dog kennels, dog food, cat litter, and was very successful in Germany, but they were looking for someone to launch it in the UK. And that sounded like an exciting role for me. I could build up a team locally in the UK, create a local experience while also have this backing of the well-established organization in Germany. And it was a fun role for many reasons. One of the reasons was that it was actually fascinating how consumers behave differently in different countries. So the most popular selling dog bed in Germany was brown, rectangular, and waterproof. And the most popular selling dog bed in the UK was pink and fluffy and had these lights that would flash when your dog sat on it. And just made me realize that consumers can really behave differently and expect different things, prioritize different things in different geographies.
That's so interesting. So based off the different cultures and everything, there's such a difference in people's preferences, which is a great learning to have up front, especially with how your career progressed and serving patients in different markets, et cetera. So you're doing Zoo Plus, and I believe after that you move into the pharma industry, and that's your first role. Talk a little bit about joining Lloyds.
So Lloyds Pharmacy is the second largest drugstore chain in the UK, and I was asked if I would be interested in a role running their e-commerce and digital P&L and operations. And the reason why I took that role was that I really felt like my experience in e-commerce, digital, could help in an industry that was more traditional in many ways. And that was, I think, the driver for the team looking to recruit me. So it felt like I could bring certain expertise that I had and apply that to a completely new industry. And that was a really exciting role. Learned a huge amount operating in healthcare for the first time and operating in a regulated industry for the first time. And I think that some of those experiences were so helpful in later Lemonade days. But that was a really exciting time for me.
So you had that role as the group head of online for Lloyds. And then I know you had a role with Dr. Max Pharmacy as well. So you had these two pharmacy roles. You know, this is your entrance, really entrance into digital healthcare, I would say. When was the time when you started thinking about Lemonade Health and the precursor to actually going and founding the company?
So my experience at Lloyds and Dr. Max, I think, made me realize that I was really excited about healthcare and I could bring a certain expertise to healthcare. Simultaneously, my father was diagnosed with cancer by accident. And the specific situation was that the ordering physician checked the wrong box on a paper form. And this was, of course, very traumatic, stressful time for us as a family. And fortunately, my dad recovered and now fully recovered and alive and healthy and very happy today. But possibly only because this mistake was made. And what that also made me realize was that healthcare shouldn't be left to chance or accident. And also, it shouldn't be okay to be ordering lab tests by checking paper forms anymore. Like that should not be allowed. Because mistakes can happen. And sometimes those mistakes will be bad. And sometimes, fortunately for my dad, that those mistakes might result in something good. But we should be really making decisions based on data and technology that doesn't make mistakes. So that really further accelerated my desire to help healthcare innovate. And I had a dream from a young age to move to Silicon Valley and set a business up in Silicon Valley, and had these very naive expectations that I'll go to Sand Hill Road and knock on the door of all of the investors and people will give me lots of money and then we'll create this huge business. Of course, it was nothing like that, much more stressful. But those things combined led me to move to San Francisco about 9 years ago now and found Lemonade Health with Ian Van Every, who was my co-founder.
Amazing story. I mean, well, one, I'm very happy that your father is okay and everything, but, you know, pretty wild how that works. And like you said, there's always room for innovation in healthcare. So you moved to San Francisco. What was the original thesis for Lemonade Health and what were the early days like?
So the original thesis was that technology can play a really important role in healthcare. And I really believe that. And it sort of almost comes back to that ordering the lab test on a paper form. Technology can really improve healthcare. But when I was looking in at the US market, this concept of telehealth existed. But telehealth was essentially putting doctors and patients on Skype and saying, do what you do in person, just do it on Skype instead. And that as a sort of disruptor or a sort of digital innovator seemed quite bizarre to me. And I think when I think about other industries, if Expedia used a similar mindset, Expedia would have been Skype with a travel agent if you wanted to book a hotel. But of course, that isn't Expedia. Or online banking would have been Skype with a bank teller, which of course wasn't the case either. And banking is a heavily regulated industry too. So it felt to me like there was no reason why in healthcare we can't use technology to create a patient experience that's different to a traditional patient experience. And I believed, and the theory was that if you can use technology, you can create a superior patient experience that's more efficient. And if you create more efficient healthcare interactions, you can reduce the cost. And by using technology and data, better quality interactions as well. So the technology never forgets to ask a question. As long as the patient is responding to the question, we can use that data, that structured data, we can churn it through algorithms, maybe machine learning protocols, and we can start to really better, more accurately diagnose a patient and make better quality treatment decisions.
It's amazing. And I've actually, you got me thinking right now, because I've never thought of it that way, that, you know, banking innovating wouldn't be, you know, doing Skype with a bank teller and that type of thing and relating it to different industries. And it's such a good point. So I told you, I mean, I've known people close to me who've used Lemonade and had great experiences. As a part of, you know, innovating that experience, you know, allowing, you know, the patient to go on and get questions answered while they're, you know, typing and clicking through, gathering all that information prior to doing any visit if it's needed, and allowing that, I guess, seamless pathway to care.
Yeah, exactly right. That was the plan and the hope, and I think much of what we were able to build. Certainly, you know, I described the 8 years of running Lemonade as a roller coaster, and so many things. You know, you don't know until you suddenly know it for the first time. And some of those things are good and exciting, but many of them, of course, are scary and daunting, and there was lots of ups and many, many, many downs. We ran out of money twice. We were trying to innovate in a legal and regulatory framework where the rules were written before smartphones even existed. So it was very difficult to navigate. Regulations in healthcare vary state by state. In the US, generally are governed at state level. So I was naive in so many ways. One of the ways I was assuming we'd move to the US and we'd launch, and then anyone in the US could get access to our care. But of course, that's not the case, and we had to expand state by state. But it was 8 fantastic years. Fortunate to have built up a really great team, helped millions of patients. We launched some great partnerships. And gosh, learned so much in the process as well.
Well, you guys certainly built something special. I know you said you're naive in so many ways, but that's almost a good thing when you're doing something like this, right? Because you don't see the roadblocks up front and you're just going for it and you're solving the issues as they come at you. So you move out to San Francisco and you start Lemonade Health. When was the key milestone where you really started to see some traction?
I think I'm visualizing a photo that we took with one of our first team members, who was a nurse we recruited in our first office in San Francisco. And she has 50 written on the whiteboard with lots of stars around it. And that was to celebrate our 50th patient who used our app. The first app that we created was actually called Polkadoc, not Lemonade. We then later rebranded to Lemonade. And that first app was to allow patients in California to get access to birth control pills. So exclusively in California, exclusively access to birth control pills. And our 50th patient, we celebrated. And that probably took us a couple of years to get there. It was quite slow going, I think, reflecting on it now. But it was slow going because we were doing something that didn't exist, that was not, there wasn't a playbook that we could replicate and improve a little bit. There were no regulations that spoke to this. We were really doing something completely new for the first time. And of course, when you're doing that, you know, you hear from everywhere why you shouldn't be doing it or can't be doing it. And so it was certainly a tough first couple of years, albeit lots of fun in many ways. And I really remember when we got our 50th patient, that felt like quite a milestone to me. And I think the next thing was then when those patients started coming back and using the service time and time again, because that, I think, was further validation that, yes, they really liked it. And probably the third point, and I think for me was a proud moment, was when we started getting a lot of feedback. we spent a lot of time looking at why patients use our service, and then also why patients don't use that service. So what happens if someone finds out about our service and doesn't use it? Because at that point, there was no other equivalent. The equivalent was go and see a doctor in person or do a video visit. So why are people not using us? And the number one reason why people didn't use us was they thought it was too good to be true. And that made me realize, wow, we've really created something here that is pretty special and unique, and that people don't believe. And in some ways, that was a great thing.
To have that as your feedback, you're so far ahead of the game at that point. I mean, you're doing something that's completely differentiated and so different from the market, which is, I mean, that's got to be something for you at that point when you're leading the company and growing, where you realize, wow, we really have something here. And, you know, 50th patient is a big milestone. What were some of the, you know, in the latter days where you really started to see the scale and expanding different states? Tell us about that process.
Yeah, so I guess in some ways we were fortunate in that we could expand the business geographically, and that just opened up bigger markets for us and increased our TAM just every time we expanded into new states. Certainly one of the challenges, as I mentioned, regulations in healthcare, especially telemedicine, vary on a state-by-state basis. So we had to tweak our model as we were expanding into states, and some states would necessitate certain types of interactions versus other states. But I think after our Series A or Series B round, we really started to get quite a lot of traction and had a very good, I guess, as we thought about it, sort of a marketing machine. We had the ability to really get consumers to our website or mobile app, provide them a suite of quite a few clinical services that we could help them with, provide them with a really great patient experience, and have them coming back time and time again. And that really felt like, okay, now we're really building something and really starting to scale it. I think at the same time, when I think back on the 8 years, one of the things that I think we did well, and there's many things we didn't do well, but one of the things I think we did do well was we recognized that healthcare was unique, and that you can't just move fast and break things in healthcare. And I certainly remember a lot of conflicting messages around this concept. So I'd had bad experience at Lloyd's Pharmacy, which was my first experience in healthcare, first experience in a regulated space. And I recognized that things that you do in healthcare, you have to do in a different way to what you might be doing if you're selling something in an entirely unregulated space, or indeed if you're doing something that's, you know, not someone's life or death and on the line in terms of decisions that you're making or technology that might or might not work. And I, of course, experienced that sort of in the early days with my dad and ordering the lab test. So, but at the same time, there's definitely a drive in Silicon Valley, or certainly was 8 years ago. It's changed a little bit now. Like, you just got to grow as fast as you can. You just got to get users and just grow. And so there's definitely that conflict between those two dynamics. And we've seen some healthcare companies over the last 8 years, particularly direct to consumer healthcare companies, take that grow at all costs approach and suffer because of it. Either some have gone out of business, or some have regulatory challenges, or some raise money at ultra high valuations and now having to raise money at much lower valuations. So getting that balance right, I think, is hard but so important, and I think that it's not easy to do.
It's such a great insight to give people who are building a company, you know, in digital health or healthcare, because you're so right. There's so many regulations and so many different touch points in healthcare where you can't just grow at all costs and forget about all that, right? You're serving patients at the end of the day. And if you're growing at all costs and you lose sight of the quality or exactly why you're doing what you're doing, it's not going to grow successfully in the end. So it's great that you guys focused on that. And I know you said it's an 8-year journey. At a certain point, you partnered with 23andMe. Tell us a little bit about that process, how that came about, and what you guys are working on now.
Yeah, we were fortunate to raise a number of financing rounds through Lemonade, and then got to the point during COVID where we sort of had one of three options. One option was to raise another financing round, a Series C round. One option was to go public via a SPAC, which was, I guess, the trend in some ways at the time, or also an option that existed that had previously not existed. Or the third was to consider an exit. And we were fortunate that we had a couple of groups interested in us. And one of those was 23andMe. And they reached out through an investment bank who they were working with, who I also had a relationship with. And the investment bank asked if I'd go meet Anne, the CEO of 23andMe, which I did. And from that very first meeting, got so excited about this idea of personalized healthcare integrating genetics. And we always at Lemonade felt like creating a personalized experience was really important, because healthcare is largely, even still, we treat everyone largely as the mean of the population. So your blood pressure target should be 120 over 80, mine should be 120 over 80. Of course, that's not true. That's just on average in the US, a good blood pressure target is this. Yours should be different based on your lifestyle choices, your family history, but most importantly, your genetics. And so what got me excited was if we can surface that to patients, so we can really start to provide some personalized guidance and advice, not just targets like blood pressure, but actually, hey, instead of when you turn 45, you should do this, you, because your particular risk profile, should probably do it when you're 35. Those sorts of things made me realize that the future of healthcare could be really exciting if you can combine genetics and the provision of healthcare. So it was a process that actually was relatively quick, and we ended up being fully acquired by 23andMe in November 2021. And the teams have been working together to build that genetics-focused personalized healthcare experience since.
Pretty amazing. And congratulations on that, by the way. So, you know, I don't think I would have ever thought really initially about that combination, Lemonade and 23andMe. Was that something you ever thought about prior to having that conversation, the potential synergy between those types of companies?
You know, it wasn't. And we had a number of times gone through this exercise where we came up with a list of potential companies that could acquire us. And 23andMe was never on that list. So it was, you know, funny in many ways, because as I started having those conversations with Anne and the wider 23andMe team, it felt like just such a perfect fit. Yeah. But we had never considered that before. So, yeah, it's funny.
That's exactly how I'm thinking now, because I don't think I would have ever considered it. But now with what you just told me, combining genetics and then following up with actual care personalized for the patient makes all the sense in the world. I mean, so it sounds like exciting times ahead for you guys, and excited to see what you do together. Now, a lot of what we talk about on this podcast is being a leader in the field. You're obviously a leader in the healthcare industry. What characteristics do you believe are important to be a successful leader, founder, you know, innovator in the digital health field?
I think there's a few things that come to mind. I think the first thing is just recognizing that healthcare is unique, a little bit to what we touched on earlier, and really appreciating that some things that you can do in other industries, you can't do and shouldn't do in healthcare. But at the same time, recognizing that it is okay and necessary often to go through the process of saying, well, why do we do things like this? And an analogy that I think is fascinating is the Apple Store, the story of the physical Apple Store. And that mindset of, what if we just flipped everything on its head? So rather than have the checkout at the front of the store, what if we made the checkout roaming around the whole of the store? What if instead of having everything on the sides of the walls and behind counters, what if we brought them into the storefront right in the middle and have them fully touchable and accessible? And I think if you pursue a similar exercise in healthcare, you quite quickly realize there are lots of workflows that exist that can be innovated and improved and changed and still maintain the things that are necessary in healthcare. Maybe it even improve the quality of the workflow, maybe further safeguard the workflow, but innovate the workflow, disrupt it in some ways as well. And I think those who are successful in innovating in healthcare are able to have that mindset and balance those two things.
I think it's a great recommendation. I know, like you said, we talked a little bit earlier about this, the fact that, you know, you can't lose sight of what you're doing and you can't just race to the end and change everything. But you're right. I mean, the status quo doesn't always have to be the status quo. You can innovate in any field, and especially healthcare. So there's definitely a ton of ways still for people to innovate just on the basic workflows, like you said, of, you know, maybe how a practice runs, or, you know, even in digital health, how a company runs right now. How can you innovate and make that more efficient or a better patient experience, you know, for the user? So great recommendation there.
I think the classic thing to listen out for is if you ask someone, oh, why do we do it like that? Or why do you do this like that? And they say, well, that's just how we've always done it. Like, that's, of course, the kind of classic, like, aha, well, let's talk a little more. Or, you know, why do we do it like this? I don't know. Like, that's also a sort of classic. But that happens a lot. And that's not, you know, we shouldn't be critical of ourselves or others who are in that mindset, because when you are in the day-to-day of any role, including in healthcare, we're just used to doing things in a certain way. And we often don't stand back and consider, why are we doing things in those ways? And I think those who can innovate in healthcare are able to take that step back.
No, I completely agree with you. So often you're just, you know, going through the motions, and that's fine, right? You're running a business and you're trying to move forward. But to be able to take that step back and really understand why you're doing things a certain way and think through if there's a better way to do it, it's the only way to progress and innovate in the field. So are there one or two key things that you learned that you believe would benefit somebody who's in the earlier stages of their career or build process?
Yeah, I think there's a few things that spring to mind. The first thing I would say is that I think those who can execute win. And in order to execute, you need to focus. So I think this applies to earlier stage startups, but also I think other, you know, probably almost any size organization. Executing and I guess shipping things or launching things, I think, is the only way to win, because only once you've executed, built something, you've got it out there and people are using it, can you really genuinely learn from it. And we would try to have this culture at Lemonade where we talked about doing things in small batches. So let's take this huge vision that we have that we could spend 10 years building and break it down into something that we can spend a few weeks building and getting it out there in the hands of patients, making sure that we've got all of the appropriate safeguards in place so that we can really start to learn how patients engage with it. Because you really don't know what you don't know until you start to get that data for the first time. But the only way to do that is to focus. So execution and focus. Because if you can't focus on doing that one thing and you're trying to do all of these other things at the same time, or you do a little bit of it, then you get distracted by this, then you get distracted by this, you end up not executing on anything. So I really think figuring out how to focus and execute so that things get launched is the secret that I think helps drive success in many ways.
I absolutely love that recommendation. Executors win, right? Because a lot of people can get stuck at, what is it, paralysis by analysis. But you know, that adage of done is better than perfect is so true, because you're never going to get everything exactly right, but you're never going to learn if you don't just launch and then figure it out as you go. So I think that's a great piece of advice there. And I was going to ask you something about, you know, people who want to rise the ranks, but I think that kind of answered that question. One thing you did mention is culture. And I actually want to take a step back again to when you started Lemonade and you were building Lemonade. What was the culture that you worked to instill in the company?
So one of the things I thought about when innovating in healthcare, along the themes of the online banking and Expedia analogy I mentioned earlier, was that I don't think I know many people that have had a healthcare interaction and they've gone away and said, wow, that was amazing, I want to leave a 5-star review. And you kind of laugh at that, but we do that in almost every other industry that we interact with, but we don't think about healthcare like that. And I remember in the early days, there was this question as to whether people that we were serving, were they patients or were they consumers? And of course they were patients, but I also think that they're consumers, because they have a choice. I think we have a choice as to where we get healthcare from often. And so I believed that if we could instill a culture within our team and we could focus on building an experience that made people go, wow, that was amazing, we would have something different. So we created company values. We called them guiding principles. And our first guiding principle was wow. We want to wow. We want to wow each other. We want to wow our patients. And for us, that meant creating a great digital experience that patients interacted with, making sure that we were responding to their questions and requests quickly, creating personalized messaging as much as possible so they weren't reading what sounded like templated messaging, and really going above and beyond to do something that they might not expect anyone to do, not least in healthcare. And that was a really important part of our culture, because that led us to make sure that we were doing everything for the patient first. That forced us to make sure that we were doing things right by the patient. And I think that helped us make decisions along the way, and we could point to that as a guiding principle in terms of how we would prioritize certain things.
I think it's a great guiding principle to have for your company, and obviously it worked for you guys. You know, oftentimes, you know, that isn't always put at the forefront, but you said it at the end there, and that's perfect. When you're working in healthcare, the one thing that you have to do is keep the patient at the forefront. Always have them be at the front of mind. So while you're innovating, you're not just innovating for the sake of innovating and being different, so you're building something cool. You're innovating to make that patient experience better. And if that patient's always there at the front and you're keeping them in mind, it's going to drive the company forward, because people are going to want to continue to come to your, whether it be a practice, your telehealth or digital health solution, or whatever it may be, and they'll have that positive experience. So obviously worked for you guys, and I think it's a great thing that you guys did focus on that. So this might be the hardest question that I always ask, and that is, what is your single most valuable attribute? What is your superpower?
I think that as an entrepreneur or founder, CEO, especially at sort of an earlier stage founder, especially in an industry that has some resistance to innovation, like some elements of healthcare, you really have to have this strong belief that what you're doing is the right thing to be doing. And that doesn't mean that you can't or shouldn't change your mind or be open to all feedback from everywhere. And I've always tried to do that. But I also think a strength that I have that I see true with other founders is just having this almost sometimes crazy, like laser focused and strong belief that what we are doing is the right thing for the healthcare systems, the right thing for patients. And 100 people can tell me every single day for the next year that why it's not going to be successful or why I can't do it, but I'm still going to try and do it. And I think that founders who've built things for the first time, completely new things, need that attribute. And I found it very difficult and had to develop it and build it up over time, but I think it's necessary. Otherwise, I think, you know, you give up or you end up starting with a really disruptive, innovative model that ends up diluting and really not delivering on what it could potentially be.
Well, it's an incredibly important superpower to have, that laser focus, as you said, for founders. I mean, especially in the healthcare field, we've, you know, talked through this, how difficult it can be because of the regulations. And you're always going to be pushed back regardless of what you're finding. But if you keep that focus on your purpose, you know, you're going to be able to win. So I think that's a great one. So let's talk a little bit about your current status and where you are today. You know, what is your current goal and what can we expect to see from you moving forward?
Yeah, so at the moment, I'm focused on making sure Lemonaid is well integrated into 23andMe, and we can start to build and deliver on those genetics-focused healthcare products I mentioned earlier. And I think that the two areas of passion for me, healthcare always has been and will continue to be, and I'm looking forward to doing more and more in healthcare. I'm supporting a couple of venture funds focused in healthcare, and I'm advising some founders in healthcare. But I think the other thing I've really developed a passion for is helping founders and CEOs. And one of the things I didn't mention that I did about halfway through my journey with Lemonade is I found a CEO coach and joined a CEO coaching group. And it's something that I wished I had done so much earlier, and found it so valuable to have this sort of impartial advisor and support group who were helping guide me through some of the challenges and decisions that we were making. So I'm really passionate about that and really enjoying the work I'm doing in that area, and hope to do more of that going forward too.
I'm so happy you just brought this up, because I forgot to ask this earlier. And one of the things we spoke about on our last call is the fact that you're an advisor to other CEOs. And I asked you some questions about that. What are some recommendations that you have for, you know, CEOs of fast growing companies right now?
I think that one of the things I talk to a number of the CEOs about is what kind of growth is good growth. So I remember 8 years ago when I was in San Francisco and markets were hot and everything was fantastic. Money was flowing. Really, growth at all costs was what investors were looking for and what you needed to compete. But we're in very different times now, and I think good growth can mean different things to different companies, but it generally means growth where the unit economics makes sense, where your acquisition cost to your lifetime value is at a ratio that works for you and your industry, and where the behaviors of the consumers after you've acquired them is valuable, is what you're wanting and what you're expecting. So in a company where you're acquiring new customers every day for a high acquisition cost, but they're only using your service once and they're not coming back, that's probably not good growth. Whereas another company that's acquiring a much smaller number of new patients or new customers, but those customers are using your service time and time again, is good growth. So I think just really, particularly when market conditions are as they are today, really focusing on that next level of detail around growth and what is this good growth, or what do you need to change to make this good growth is a conversation I have a lot.
Well, what a great recommendation. Focus on, you know, where your growth is actual good growth, because you're right. You know, years ago is much different than now, where there's this flight to quality, right? And only the quality companies are going to be the ones that are going to be able to grow and survive and prosper. So, Paul, great talking to you today. Thank you so much for coming on the Health City Podcast. Appreciate the time.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on. I really loved it.
Hey, everybody. Thank you for tuning in to today's episode. For more information, feel free to visit the Health City website at www.healthcitypodcast.com. All episodes and insights will be stored on the site, so be sure to stay tuned.